I'm Debbie Charon, age 51. Today is June 22nd, 2017, and I'm at the StoryCorps in Chicago at the Cultural Center. And I'm here with my daughter, Becca, and my mom, Doris, although I don't really call her Doris.
Hi, my name's Becca Charon. I'm 15 years old. Today's date is June 22nd of 2017. I'm at StoryCorps in Chicago, and Debbie is my mom, and Doris is my grandma.
Hi, I'm Doris Fogel, and I'm 83 years old, and today is June 22nd, 2017, and I'm here with my daughter Debbie and my granddaughter Becca.
Grandma, when and where were you born?
I was born on May 3rd, 1934 in Berlin, Germany.
And where did you grow up?
First 4 years were spent in Berlin, and then in 1939, I'm having a hard time.
It's okay.
We went to Shanghai.
How did you end up in Shanghai?
Well, by 1939, America had already closed their doors for immigrants, and so the only place left for us to go was Shanghai.
And so how many years were you there?
I was there for 8 years, and I had my 13th birthday on the ship coming to America.
What was it like there in Shanghai?
Well, you know, growing up, we were in an internment camp. Most of the population really doesn't know that 20,000 Jews were interned in Shanghai because it was the only place left in the world where people could go to escape Hitler. You didn't need a visa and you didn't need an affidavit. And as I was growing up, there was a wealthy Jewish philanthropist from Hong Kong by the name of Sir Horace Kaduri, who built a school for the children. And the interesting part about that is that, we learned how to speak English, we learned how to speak French. We didn't have school books, but our parents made our books. And we really were well educated, which is, you know, an amazing thing. You know, I always tell students that at the age of 13, weighing all of 65 pounds, I was tested by the Board of Education, and I could have been a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
And my mom, who was herself an educated woman in Germany, said, "Where does a 13-year-old belong?" And the answer was 8th grade. And so that's really where I started my education.
So you keep talking about your mom. What was your relationship like with her and your father?
Well, my father died when I was a year old, so I never knew him. And I had, as you might expect, I had a very close relationship with my mother. And yet, I also had a close relationship with my aunt. She was not my mother's sister. She and her husband are the people that took care of my mom and me when my dad died. And the interesting part about that is my mother was the dreamer. My aunt was the practical woman. And it's because of her that I was always street smart and learned how to really take care of myself.
How would you describe yourself as a child?
As a child.
Do you think you were happy? Was it hard for you to get over Shanghai? Well, not get over, but...
No, you never get over that. But, no, I was happy. I made a lot of friends, and I was athletic, and, I enjoyed playing with the Chinese kids in my lane, and made a lot of friends. which really, you know, it was a testament. I think I've told you all before, it was after 50 years of being here in the United States, because of the internet and because of social media, 15 of my classmates who live literally around the world have found each other. And we've gotten together in years gone by. It's kind of stopped the last 2 or 3 years, but for a lot of years, we met once a year in a different country and a different city. And the interesting thing about that is that a lot of us, I think, shut out in our brains a lot of the things that happened. But when you get together with people that were your classmates and you live together, you'll say, do you remember? You know, do you remember? And as I knew we were coming here, something ticked in my mind that I had so totally forgotten. I was 4 years old, and this aunt and uncle kind of took care of me. And there used to be, and I don't know if your mom even remembers this, the little sandwiches. Well, I was a bad eater, never ate very much. And this aunt would make tiny little sandwiches, and I can picture myself squeezing behind a table in her apartment and having those little sandwiches. I hadn't thought about that in 80 years.
So then when you came to America, where did you live?
Well, first place was in Peoria, Illinois, because in right after the war was over, many well-to-do Jewish people, and I'm sure this happened in the non-Jewish world as well, would sponsor people to come to America. And because this aunt and uncle had a cousin in Peoria that sponsored them, they asked these people to find a sponsor for my mother and I, because they would not leave Shanghai until they found a sponsor for us. And so that is really where my life in America began, in Peoria.
And when you lived in Peoria, where did you live?
Well, first place we lived was in one room. And, you know, at age 13, 14, that's very difficult, because not so much that I shared a bed with my mother, but I can see in your family, which is so wonderful, your children have friends over. I could never do that. So, you know, you ate there, you slept there, and you went down the hall to take a bath. And it was difficult. And then the second place, and this is something that people don't talk about, you know, they don't talk about what happened to you. And also, times were different. When World War II was over, there were no food stamps. There were none of the social things that we could do for people that we bring in now. And so, first job my mother had, here's a college-educated woman. She welded cans in a factory until she passed out, because she had a daughter to support. I had a newspaper route a month after I came to the States, because I wanted some money in my pocket. So that, you know, that part of our life was pretty difficult. But you know what? We survived.
Buck? Do you have a question? No?
Still in Shanghai, and you found out that the war had ended, and you, like, what were you feeling? Do you remember what that felt
like? Oh, absolutely. To this day, I can remember the day that the war was over and the American planes flying overhead and dropping leaflets down that the war was over. And, you know, I was just about 13 then, so almost a teenager, and, you know, we grew up very quickly. And oh my goodness, we raced down to the docks to meet the American ships, because, and one of the first things that I looked for when I came to America were Hershey bars that are not very big but very thick. then I realized that these were part of the rations. This was nothing that was sold in a store, you know. And, you know, life in Shanghai was so difficult. One of the things that I tell the kids when I speak about, you know, some of my experiences is the day that we left Shanghai. I thought my bed was going to walk out by itself because it was so infested with bedbugs. You know, and I wondered, would the day ever come that I would have a bed of my own?
So what's your best memory of childhood?
My best memory of childhood? Probably my early childhood you're talking about. Just being with my friends when we didn't have to go in bunkers because the sirens went off because the bombs were falling, and playing sports, and that's about it in Shanghai.
Do you have a worst memory of your childhood?
Yeah, the worst day was July 17th, 1945. And I can assure you, you can ask any survivor of that, you know, part of our experience. It was the day that the Americans bombed Shanghai. Unfortunately, they had to get a station that was located near our camp. And when the bombs were falling, I remember being in school and hiding under our desks. And then the all-clear siren went off a couple minutes later, but it was a couple of days before we were reunited with our parents. And I think that was probably the worst of the worst. Because, you know, I mean, we were children, so we weren't attacked by the Japanese as some older people. If they wanted to leave the area, the compound, there was a man by the name of Goya, who was the meanest SOB you'd ever want to find. And, I mean, he could poke you in the rear just as easy as letting you leave. So, there, you know, there are varying stories of adults and children.
Who has been the biggest influence on your life, and what lessons or lesson did that person teach you?
Are we talking about now my adult life?
Sure.
Well, I suppose one of the big things is the strength that my mother had to bring me up. She was a single mom working, went from, you know, job to job till she finally got something in her field because she was in accounting. And again, my aunt, because she was so strong. And then people that I met here in America, and after I got married and moved to Fort Wayne, I think a woman by the name of Betty Stein, who just celebrated her 100th birthday and is still a very vital person, was a great influence in my life. She pushed me on and on to do, because she said, you know you can do it, you're intelligent. And also, I hate to use the word dedicated, but more or less I did, because of the people that were good to my mom and me. There aren't too many organizations that I haven't volunteered for, certainly in my 50-some years in Fort Wayne. And that was always part of my life, doing good. And I see that now replicated in your mother and you.
So you talked about your husband. When did you meet him, and who is he?
He was. I met him here. I was working here in Chicago. That's another thing. Here my mother is in a foreign land. She's alone, and she's working. And, you know, always had hopes that I would meet a Jewish man, stay in my religion, and most kids that lived in Peoria moved to Chicago. That was the big city. So in 1960, at a lecture by JUF, I met my husband, who was an attorney in Fort Wayne. And that was, I don't know, I think it was in around the early part of December, and then that following July, I was married. And he passed away 9.5 years ago. And as you know, I retired from my job as the executive director of the Jewish Federation just before I turned 80, a couple months before I turned 80, and my three children, your mom and her brothers, decided no family left in Fort Wayne. It was time to move back to Chicago. You know, I missed all of my grandchildren's growing up, but I didn't miss it really in their very early ages. I was there for almost every birth, and once a month I used to drive here to see you guys.
What's your favorite memory of me?
Of you?
Mm-hmm. I think I know. It was the birthday party?
Yes. That is one of my favorite memories. You were 3 years old, and I took you to, as you know, I took you to a birthday party, and I'm ready to go in because your brother and sister, it was very difficult to leave them anywhere because they were kind of shy and cried, "It's okay, Grandma, you can leave." And that, and also the other favorite memory is when I knew I was coming to Chicago, and you guys knew I was coming, and I'd be as I was driving up, when you were little bitty kids, running out, Grandma's here," and hugging you, and being able, which is something teenagers don't do anymore, but when you were little, I had that affection from all of you kids, and it's very special.
What about with my mom? What's your favorite memory of her?
Lots of things. She's my best friend.
Name one.
I don't know where to begin. I really don't.
Mom, what's your favorite memory of spending time with Grandma?
You know what? It's kind of funny. It's almost, I think one of my favorite things is now, like being older and having her here. Stop it. You were the one that wasn't going to cry.
I like her. Well, it is. It's, you know, when I moved, and I've thought about this, when I moved here, I know that a text or a phone call would bring all of you guys here, but I have tried very hard not to be a burden on any one of my kids, but it's automatic to reach out to you because you've been so good to me. You tell me as it is, and if there's something you don't like, you don't pussyfoot around. You tell me, "Mom, you shouldn't say that. Mom, you shouldn't do that." But that's okay. That's okay because it makes me a better person.
I try to be honest.
Well, and yeah, I'm just very lucky that I have you guys here.
It's nice having you down the street.
Certainly really is. Down the street. I'm a very lucky woman. Most of my friends have their kids spread out all over the country, and you made it possible. You made it possible that I could be in the same city with you and your brothers and my 8 grandchildren, some of which I'm closer to than others.
What do you think the most important lessons are that you've learned in your life?
Be honest and look out for people that have less than you, because once you were hungry, I was hungry once, and it hurts me deeply to see people that are hungry, that can't afford the basic things of life. And I've always tried, you know, to be in my ability to be as generous as I can be. And you have no idea how good it makes me feel to see the things that you do, you, Becca, and you, your mother, with the refugees that have come in, the things that you do with children, the love that you have for doing good, and animals. These are things that you don't express. I can't express, but in my heart, it makes me sleep really easy at night.
What do you want to ask?
What are you proudest of in your life?
What am I proudest of? Well, I suppose of all the awards that I've been given, as I think, while you were there, you came just before I retired. I was given the Sagamore of the Wabash, which is the highest honor an Indiana resident can get from a governor. And it was for all the volunteer work and all the speaking that I do. I really don't think that there are too many schools in Indiana that I haven't spoken to. And as you know, I'm on the National Speakers Bureau and of the Federation system, and I have spoken all over the country. And I am proud to know that, you know, at 83, I am one of the youngest survivors. And as I tell the kids, who's going to be left to tell the story when we're gone and we're dying every single day? I mean, I hope to be around for a few more years, but this is what's happening. And so, as you also know, from the minute I came to Chicago, back to Chicago, I signed up with the Holocaust Museum and to talk to kids, particularly kids, because they need to know, if at all possible, not out of a textbook, but from a person, of what it was like to be deprived, to not, you know, have food. And when you guys were growing up, you and your brothers, I had a thing about no hand-me-downs. I wanted you guys to have everything that I didn't have. I see how wonderful it is with you guys. You know,
yeah,
you're getting stuff from
Becca's
your cousin.
Entire closet.
Come on. You know, you wearing your sister's clothes or vice versa, or getting, that's wonderful. But at that time, that's all I ever had were hand-me-downs. And so I didn't want that for my children. And fortunately, I was able to do that. Not that there's anything wrong with it, for goodness sakes, but that was important to me as you guys were growing up.
Has there been like a question or an action that a student has done towards you during one of your speeches that you'll never forget? Or a tough question you get asked?
Well, there have been not real tough, but there have been one stirred a memory for it. Yeah, after I talked about the bed. Walking, you know, about. So first of all, you realize for 8 years, I slept in a bed with my mother. And then coming to America, I slept in a bed with my mother. Well, to this day, when I go to bed at night, whether it is a single bed or a big bed or no matter what, I sleep on the edge of my bed. Never gave it much thought. That's just how I sleep. Mm-hmm. And one of the students asked me, how big was your bed in Shanghai? And I realized it was very small. And I thought, you know, that's why I sleep the way I do.
Yeah.
And a tougher, some questions are, I try to keep politics and religion out of when I speak. And one of the questions that I was asked recently by a student in Moline, Illinois, when during the question and answer, he asked me, I don't remember the exact question, but it had refugees in it, the word refugees. And I wanted to be very careful what I said. And all I could say to him was, if the gentleman who's sitting in the White House now would have been president in 1947, I would not be here. And that was that. And at that same talk, another student asked me how I felt about the Israeli soldiers and the Palestinians. And again, I didn't want to get into a long discussion, so all I said was, if the Palestinians attack the Israelis, the soldiers have a right to defend themselves. And three teachers came up to me afterwards and said, that was such a thoughtful answer. Because I don't like to get into that. And you know, life's been good to me in America. And I tell this to the kids, you work hard, you get an education, and you have support from your family, there is nothing that you can't do. I mean, look where I came from, and look what I have done with my life. So it's, I'm independent. Sure, I lean on your mother, and I lean on you guys to a certain extent. But I've learned to live alone, and I make the best of that. You know, you become... I have never been one of these survivors that has a chip on her shoulder. You know, why did I survive and somebody else didn't? Well, there is a God, and he looked out for me.
How has your life been different than what you'd imagined it to be?
Well, I don't think I can really quite go into that to the extent that I would like to. I really don't think I would like to talk about that.
How would you like to be remembered? Although you're not going to die for a while. So,
I hope not.
Because I know you like to obsess about that.
I know I do.
So we're not talking about
that. I do obsess about that. Because I keep thinking, you know, who's going to take what? How are they going to get rid of everything that I have?
Okay, I'll take your candy.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, no, your Uncle Art would do that. He'd be in there first. Just as a caring person who loved her children and grandchildren very much, and that did some good, that educated some people, and that helped unfortunate people as much as possible, because I certainly tried in my lifetime to do that and continue to do that. You know, it's very difficult, really, a lot of times, you know, when I get dressed in the morning or I do something and I think, you're really 83 years old? People are always saying, you don't look like you're 83, you don't sound like you're 83. Well, sometimes I feel like I'm 83, depending on what day of the week it is. So that's, you know, I'm just very happy to be here and to have a family that I know cares about me. That's the most, I had no family. You know, right. Your grandmother and I were the only ones left out of entire family. Everybody was killed. And so for me to be able to be in a place where my whole family is, that's the most important thing in life for me. Okay.
Do you have any questions for us?
Do you love me? I know you do.
Yes, of course.
I know. You're special. You're very special.
I'm your favorite, we know.
I know. We say that all the time. Well, in many ways, you are. You're very caring. You really and
Thank
truly
you.
Are. And I have that in my head all the time. I know I can call on you. You said something to me, I don't even know if you remember, and that has stood with the day that you all came to Fort Wayne to help me pack up. Yet see, I'm here 4 years, So you were 11 then? And you guys were leaving? And I was kind of weepy a little bit, and you got in the car, and his mother started the car. You sent me a text that said, I know you're sad right now, but just remember, I am always there for you. And I have never forgotten that, and you have been.
Becca's good with the weepy notes. I still have a little index card that you wrote. It's in the, you know, the black and white thing that I put my contacts in when I travel?
Yes.
So you, on an index card, when I was, so I went home to Fort Wayne the day before you guys came for Papa's funeral. How old were you? So how long ago did Dad die?
9.5 years ago.
Okay, so you were 6, and you wrote on a little card with really funny handwriting. You said, "Dear Mom, I'm so sorry that your dad died. Love, Becca."
Yeah, I mean, that's Becca.
And I still have that little card.
That's Becca.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lot of cards that you have sent me over the years. Yeah. I've learned to throw things out.
No, you have not.
Yes, I but I have boxes of pictures and things. Well, those are, you know what? Those are important things. And what else have you got in life, you know, if you don't have that? I just feel that I am gone a long road, and I am very lucky to have what I have. May not be wealth and money, but by God, I have a wonderful family, and that's the most important. I'm not lacking for anything.
Yeah. No, it's a legacy. Well, I have one other funny Becca story about Papa. So I don't know if you remember, but when we got to the temple, we walked in, and the casket was in the front of the temple, and you had never seen a casket before. And you said, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, that's what Pap has in." And you said really loud, and it was really quiet. You said, "There's no way he can breathe in that box."
That's very funny. That's very good.
Yeah, and I don't remember things very well, but I do remember that. And I was like, "Oh, sweetie, he's not breathing in there." Yeah.
No, won't be doing that.
Yeah, so that was another. There's a lot of funny Becca stuff, but we have some of that on video.
I have.
Yeah.
One of my memories, and I just talked about it the other night to your cousin Annie. You were 3 years old, 4 years old maybe, and we were at their house for a brunch. They were living on that other house on the patio, and you guys were all playing on the swings, and you weren't talking very much, and somebody got hurt. And somehow you made it, crawling and running over to where all the adults were, and you made it known to us in your own way that somebody over there was hurt. I can see it in front of me. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. No, because she was slower on the speech. She wanted to wait until she could talk to say a lot of stuff.
Right.
I got it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it now, honey.
I'm just glad that kind of your final chapter can be where all of us are together so that we can just have, you know, just normal our Sunday night dinners.
Oh, absolutely. And absolutely.
Regular life, not just big occasions.
Not just vacations. That's right.
Yeah.
And again, I say, you know, I depend on you, but I don't try to infringe on your time or your life. You know, if something bothers me, I'll call. And I have to tell you, you have got to be one of the luckiest women that I know.
Oh, you have to bring up Andy.
I have to. He is. I have said this 1,000 times. Every woman that has a daughter should have a son-in-law like my son-in-law. He's the best. He is the best father, husband, and son-in-law. I mean, if I say anything to him that I might need or want, just abstractly, he's there. And I told you, I don't know if I ever told you, but he wrote me a letter.
The note from the wedding.
He wrote me a letter saying, "I know you gave me your most precious gift in life, and I will always protect her." And you don't forget things. I mean, that's Andy. He is just the best of the best.
this was not about Dad.
I know that, but it's part. But it's part of my life because I love him as if he were my son. I really do, and not everybody has that kind of a relationship with their in-laws or their children, even.
Yeah.
Any questions more from you, Becca?
I don't think so.
You talked a lot about your mother, but you never said her name.
Edith.
Do you want to say her full name just so it's on the
record? Sure. Edith Warshawski, and it's spelled Warshawski.
I was so proud when I could spell her last name. What year was Grandma born?
1905.
In Berlin?
In Berlin. Educated in Berlin.
And did she have siblings?
Yes. She had a brother who went to what was then Palestine, became Israel, married, and somehow when Grandma came to, during the war, there was not much, correspondence because letters were always looked at by the government. And when Grandma came to America, he leaned upon her to bring him to America. But she certainly didn't have anything. So there was some kind of a split there. And Grandpa and I, Papa and I, went to Germany, to Berlin. And that was my first trip? No, my second trip. I went with you, first trip. But anyway, when we got to Berlin and we checked into the hotel, I said to him, you know what, I'm going to look in a phone book and see if there's anybody left. And I found my mother's brother. He had divorced his wife in Israel, moved back to Germany, and had married this German woman in Israel, but they moved to Germany. And I found his name, so I called. And the next day, I met him for lunch, and he said, the last time he saw me, he powdered my tush. Well, that was I was 3.5 years old. And we had a nice visit. And then he passed away the year after that.
What was his name?
Arno. Yeah, Arno. And I'm trying to remember. Grandma died March 13th, and it was in April of that year that your father and I went to Berlin. He finally consented to go to Germany. Why, as you know, I've gone every year for a number of years. And I go to the cemetery to see my father's grave and so on. And he died. And then my friend Peter, who lives in Berlin, told me, I had him check on my uncle and told me that he had passed away, and somewhere in Israel, and as many times as I've been there, I've never been able to find out, but there are cousins there that, would have a couple of children that he and his first wife had. You know, life is funny. I've told you the story that my father died when I was a year old. He had two brothers, and those two brothers went to South America. When we went to China, but before that. So we lost complete contact of these brothers. And when Grandma lived in Cleveland, one of her very good friends went to New York on a trip. And she's riding in a cab. And in those days, I don't know if they still do that, but the cab drivers, they have their name and a picture. And long story short, we found out that the driver of that cab was my father's brother. They had come from South America to New York, and I contacted them, and I went to New York. We kind of lost contact after that. And somebody else appeared. There's a paper in New York that came about right after the war. It's called Aufbau, which in German translation means to rebuild. And I think it was when Grandma had her, 50th birthday maybe or something, I put an ad in there. And the sole purpose really of that paper was for people all over the world to find family that disappeared during the war. And I think that paper, and we found people, you know, through that paper. So it's very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
So many things that people don't know about.
Right. Well, it was hard to find people before the internet.
Right. And, well, before the internet, that's very true. And, you know, I've been to genealogy meetings where genealogists have come in, and it's very difficult for Jewish people to do genealogy because everybody was killed.
Right. I think we're done.
Yeah.
Okay.